Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The Brothers Anderson are... This is Eric.
And by the way, you know, when you're telling these little stories, here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex. Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is Drew.
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen. And not a one of you is prepared for it.
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case keep your eyes open and watch the road. And, you know, anyway. Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Brother Jay.
And tonight we're going to talk about the 2007 movie Breach.
You're going to be an agent.
Say it again, okay?
You're going to be an agent.
You're being tasked to headquarters, where you'll be riding the desk of an agent named Robert Hansen, considered our most knowledgeable analyst on Russian intel. He's also a sexual deviant. This could mean a huge embarrassment to the Bureau. You're going to keep an eye on him for us.
Tell me five things about yourself, four of them true.
I don't think I'd be much good at bluffing.
That would have counted as your lie right there.
Is there anything you can tell me about him?
Sure.
Take nothing personally.
You know why the Soviet Empire collapsed?
Good morning.
Godlessness.
God expects you to live your faith, Eric, at all times.
I don't know what I'm supposed to be looking for. The guy doesn't drink, goes to church every day.
Faith, family, country. Those are the things that matter.
Come to admire him, I see.
Yes.
Respect him?
I never cared about making headlines. Wanted to make history.
He's a traitor, Eric. Started spying for the Russians in 1985. Good news is you're in the middle of the biggest case we've ever run. The damage he's done to the U.S. government is in the billions. Might be years before we truly know how many deaths he's been responsible for.
Why don't we just arrest him?
Can't do that. Director wants him caught in the act.
What if he's smarter than I am?
He spent the last 20 years outthinking Russian spies. He's smarter than all of us.
Have you been in my briefcase?
No.
Don't like being scrutinized. Have to do something about that.
He's parked outside your apartment.
Where were you?
I'm telling so many lies now, I can't keep them straight anymore.
Are you finding this job stressful?
Sometimes.
Pray more.
He knows the names of every source we've ever turned. Their lives are all at risk.
I need to know if I can trust you.
What are you doing?
Who is calling you in the car?
Put the gun down!
I need to know if I can trust you!
Directed by who? A guy named Billy Ray. I thought it was like some kind of crazy pseudonym. It may still be.
No. I got to see him on the DVDs. I have all the extras.
So. Oh, sweet. Well, yeah, this is your recommendation. So, Brother Jay, why are we watching Breach? It's, by the way, is it about a difficult childbirth?
No. Breach is about the biggest spy betrayal that the U.S. has suffered through.
And it's the second movie we've seen about Robert Hansen.
Is it?
This one happens to be a different Robert Hansen. The first Robert Hansen was Frozen Ground.
Yeah. Sorry. When you said, I was thinking of other spy movies we've seen, but yes.
And I would describe this as a real, like a taut, slow burn thriller.
It's a fantastic suspense movie.
Yeah. There's not a lot of action to it. But it's, I think, you know, and bless his pointy little head. His name Ryan Phillippe does a great job.
Yeah. Okay. First of all, did you notice his girlfriend, his wife in the movie?
Did I notice her?
Yeah. Do you know who she is?
Well, I know who she is now.
Yeah. You recognize her from Hannibal?
I did not.
Do you realize she's in Hannibal?
I did not.
She's the other psychiatrist that's in love with Will.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. Yeah. So, Billy Ray, he directed Shattered Glass, which is also a really good movie. Have you seen that?
I haven't.
It's really worthwhile. Do you ever listen to the Slate podcasts?
No.
Okay, well, on the Slate Political Gabfest, which I recommend, David Plotz is one of the, he's like the main host, and his wife, who is Hannah, I can't remember her last name now.
Montana.
Yes, Hannah Montana. Yeah, she's played by Chloe Sevigny in Shattered Glass, because she used to work with Stephen Glass or whatever his name was.
Hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, so recommend for Shattered Glass, and also a good performance out of Hayden Christensen, which we haven't seen if you've seen any of the Star Wars movies, because he did not deliver any in those movies.
Okay.
Yeah, Billy Ray actually is primarily a screenwriter. He wrote the screenplay for Hunger Games, the original one, and Captain Phillips as well.
Hmm. He inherited this from Eric O'Neill, who, after he quit the FBI about 5 or 6 months after capturing Hansen, he decided that he was going to write a book with the FBI's approval. And they'd had some other crazy, great, wonderful screenwriter who had started the project and then died. And so he really was trying to get this vehicle going. And as it turned out, most of the studios were kind of reluctant to touch it. And then that's where Billy Ray picked it up and decided it was a great story and it was a great screenplay. It needed some work still, but it was, since it was basically a book adaptation made into a real movie, he kind of felt that it needed a certain gravity to it, but that he thought that with the help and support of Eric O'Neill, that he would be able to accomplish that. So Eric O'Neill was on site most of the time, as was, he had access to Juliana as well. So he was able to get some of the opinions of Eric, getting the mannerisms of Hansen and what Hansen acted like and sounded like to Chris Cooper, so Chris Cooper could kind of incorporate that.
Well, and for people who haven't seen it, Eric O'Neill is the main character in this drama. He's the Ryan Phillippe character, and he's an FBI employee, not an agent, but an employee who is assigned to work undercover as a clerk to Robert Hansen, played by Chris Cooper, who is a senior agent who's suspected, at least O'Neill is told, he's suspected of being a sexual deviant. Although apparently in real life that wasn't the case. They just added that for a little bit of drama. There's a couple of things that differ from the real world, but since this is a movie, I'm not too worried about the actual facts, because the essential story is true.
Well, and it may have been, I mean, and it may have been a ploy. I mean, it would be a good real life ploy to say, you know, we're working him as a sexual deviant as a cover for what they were really trying to do, because they didn't want to read Eric in on what exactly was going on.
Well, exactly.
Although it becomes pretty problematic, at least from a moralistic standpoint, when you're watching the movie, at least for me it was, because I had to contemplate, and like, they're worried that he's a sexual deviant, but they are seemingly more interested in covering their ass about it than they really are dealing with his sexual proclivities and possible harassment of other workers.
Well, yeah, it seems like if it was only for sexual deviance, then they wouldn't take these dramatic steps. And little do we know at the beginning, or does Eric know, that it's not just little steps they have taken. They have taken ginormous steps, because they suspect Robert Hansen as being like the mole in the FBI. And it was all, it's funny. There's, in the very beginning where we meet the Robert Hansen character, you know, O'Neill is supposed to be sort of spying on him, acting like a clerk. And when, Hansen goes out of the office for the first time, O'Neill goes into Hansen's office, and like is like poking around a little bit, and Hansen comes back unexpectedly, so O'Neill has to rush out, and Hansen comes back, and they have one of their very terse conversations in the beginning, but the end of which he tells them that if he ever catches you in the office, you're going to be pissing purple for a week. Do you know the reason why they use that?
Nope.
Okay. Well, in one of Hansen's favorite quotes is from a George Patton speech, where Patton actually refers to the purple piss in Japanese.
Okay.
And so he used that in conversation. And the way they figured out originally that he might be the mole is because it comes off in the mole's correspondence. So
the obscure syntax choices.
Exactly. Yeah. A weird quote just comes up there like, wait, hold on. But
yeah, and very quickly in the beginning of this movie, you realize how much of a hard ass Hansen is.
Oh yeah. And he seems like a very, even though he seems like a weirdo, which would explain why he's being investigated for sexual deviance. He also seems like true blue. He seems like he's way more interested in actually doing his job than he is about following the rules.
Yeah. And that's evidenced by his, you know, his whole contempt for any system structure that he's put in and his ability to go right around the structure, regardless of the rules in place. Cause you know, there's a point early on where Eric is complaining he needs a faster computer, so he's going to put a requisition form in. And, you know, Robert says, there's new computers out in the hallway. Just go grab one. And, you know, Eric's like, well, they're not ours. And Robert says, stop thinking like a bureaucrat. Just go grab one. In fact, grab two, because I need one as well.
Oh, yeah. And that's the kind of thing. Again, Hansen, one of the things about him is he is the smartest guy in any room. Just ask him. Like,
he certainly thinks highly of himself. Yes,
he is the best at what he does, and he's not afraid to tell you that. And the fact that he intimidates Eric is a great source of tension in the beginning of the movie. It's pretty great. It sets the playing field. It kind of tells you what kind of movie you're in for.
Well, and one of the things that was true to life that was, you saw an example of early on in the movie, was that Hansen deliberately walked at angles to drive people into walls.
Yeah, I was wondering about that.
Yeah, that was he did that on purpose because apparently it was a thing just to kind of exalt his power, to make people uncomfortable and have to go around him.
Well, okay. And that, again, it reminds me of a former boss of mine who I could best describe as very comfortable in other people's discomfort. Which is an excellent weapon. It's an excellent weapon, but not a very good management style, let's say. Not very good at team building.
Well, Hansen didn't want a team built, though.
Yeah, neither did my former boss.
Yeah, he didn't have any interest in having a team or having a cohort or even having an assistant. He just wanted to do his thing.
Well, and also he had been assigned to the FBI moved him into a special position. He was like months away from retirement, but they moved him off of his foreign post or whatever and brought him back to ostensibly to structure the data systems of the FBI.
It was obvious that they wanted to encapsulate him or insulate him from the ability to do any damage, because they knew he was up to something, but they couldn't really prove it per se. But they had evidence that he was misbehaving, so they were balancing back and forth, and they found a vehicle in which to make it appear as if that he had some value to give yet. Even though he suspected it was fake.
Well, and we learn as the movie progresses that this is not a new thing. They have been looking at Hansen for a very long time. In fact, when they suspected they had a mole, they created a task force in order to find the mole. Unfortunately, the person they picked to lead the task force, the best mind at the time to find him, happened to be Hansen himself.
So the mole was hunting himself.
Which explains why they didn't catch him.
Right.
But we get a little kind of, it's a funny interaction with Hansen in the very beginning, because you learn that he is very, very religious. He is Catholic.
Very devout.
Yes. And he also is like an old timer. Like because he's a suspected of being a sexual deviant, Eric and Hansen are in the elevator with a news crew, including a very attractive reporter. And Eric is like, you know, so she was pretty cute. And he's like, you're married and you can't trust a woman in a pantsuit. Men wear pants. The world doesn't need any more Hillary Clintons.
Which is funny.
It's very funny. Because this is, what did this take place? What year was this in? When did Hansen get convicted.
When did he get convicted?
Not convicted, but when was he arrested? Was it in the 90s or was it after 9/11?
No, because his tenure ended right when Bush took office, because Ashcroft was overseeing.
Okay, so it was before 9/11 then?
I think so.
Must have been.
I couldn't swear to it, but that's why there's the internet here.
Yeah.
Oh, God, no.
Well, Wikipedia. Like Hansen, I only trust the internet to watch Catherine Zeta-Jones movies. Apparently that was another true-to-life element, was that he liked Catherine Zeta-Jones movies and would watch them in his office with the door closed. Creepy.
So he was arrested in 2001.
Okay. But obviously pre-9/11.
Yeah, February 18th.
Yeah, okay. Well, that makes sense. So, and it's, of course, an embarrassment to the department to have a person that was a spy. But still, the fact that they caught him, and the fact that he was a legitimate bad guy. The secrets he gave to the Russians cost the lives of people.
Well, and damaged national security for decades and compromised assets, both domestic and foreign. So the Laura Linney character makes a point that, you know, we will never realize how much damage he did because we're still tallying it. We're still recovering from it.
And I think I'm a big fan of Laura Linney.
I do too. But, I think she does a great performance.
Yeah, yeah. Because you don't like her at first, and that's okay.
Well, I don't know that you really ever like her all that much, except at the end.
Well, you kind of find more sympathy for her at the end.
Yeah, because she's, you know, TV dinners and no cat.
Yeah. She's a hard ass. But that's because she spent most of her career trying to track down this guy. And that's tough. I mean, I can only imagine working for an agency for that long and having like that, basically that one assignment and having it plod on for so long.
Well, and knowing, you know, and it must be very demoralizing to know someone's guilty and damaging and that you can't do anything about it because you have to accumulate evidence and, you know, follow the proper channels, the proper legal channels that he's circumventing. He's not even doing the right thing. So you have to play within the rules when he's not. That's got to be very frustrating.
Well, yeah. And these days, it's funny. I don't mean, perhaps my opinion of our government is less than it used to be, at least on a national level. But it seems like now they could just drop a drone bomb on his ass. Call it good.
I don't think drones are legal inside the U.S. Drone strikes are legal.
Well,
I don't think we can drop drone strikes on our own citizens.
We can drop on on our own citizens if they are on foreign soil.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing.
That's another discussion
yeah.
entirely.
Yeah, it is. It's but yeah. Luckily, though, this is all about process. This is all about O'Neill being kind of taken in by Hansen.
Well, at one point, you get the impression that even though Eric knows that he's a bad guy, he feels some empathy for how outcast Hansen is. And he, in some cases, he defends him to a small degree, but knows that Hansen's such a bad guy that he's still totally on board with doing whatever he can to entrap Hansen, you know, including going to bat and saying, no, look, you may have spooked him and he may be about ready to go to ground, but, you know, Eric at one point is very clearly adamant that he's going to continue the mission regardless. And, the agency just needs to back off and let him do it and kind of help Hansen relax and not worry that he's being watched and just let Eric kind of shepherd him through, which is kind of funny when you think about it, because Hansen was so biblically inclined and so religious and so devout that it kind of worked to the advantage. It kind of helped his undoing.
Well, and the fact that he is very religious does not, it's not that he's just religious. He's a devout Catholic and a member of Opus Dei, did you ever read The Fraternity of the Stone?
No.
Okay. The Fraternity of the Stone is a David Morrell book that talks about Opus Dei. It was kind of one of the first thriller books to do so, since it used to be sort of a secret organization within the Catholic Church made up of lay people who were kind of like the CIA or the Special Forces.
So it's like the Freemason's arm of the church?
Kind of, yes. Yeah, like an elite, not like a, not necessarily like an elite task force as much as a group of elites who have money and power so they can act on the church's behalf.
I see. So it's like a super PAC.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. And how much of it is real? I mean, there really is such an organization, and it probably is really made up of influential people. But, you know, again, like the Bilderberger group, it may not be the source of all conspiracies.
Well, and Hansen, they make a point, whether or not, I don't know if this is true, but you know, they made a point that he converted from Lutheranism to Catholicism, which is pretty, you know, the only thing bigger than that would have been if he would have been a Protestant.
Well, no, Lutherans are Protestants.
No, I know, but I mean, a full-on, you know, devout Protestant. I mean,
yeah, Lutherans are one step away from the Catholic Church, really.
Right.
They're not very far away.
No.
Not like Methodists.
We don't know any Lutherans, do we?
Yeah, exactly. All we have are Lutherans.
Yeah.
Yeah. Between us and Garrison Keillor, it's like we grew up in Lake Wobegon.
Or something.
And, of course, one of the reasons why O'Neill may have been selected is because he is Catholic, or he's a lapsed Catholic. He went to Gonzaga, which is a Catholic school, and so he was taught by Jesuits. And so, and of course, his girlfriend happens to be East German, and she is not an active churchgoer. And Kathleen Quinlan plays Hansen's wife.
Yeah, for a split second, I was like, is that Ann Archer?
I know, it's a little creepy.
It is, because the resemblance is uncanny, but, you know, then I had to think in my head, well, you know, the last time I saw Ann Archer was, you know, a Harrison Ford, you know, Tom Clancy movie, and she was substantially, you know, that was a long time ago, so I'm sure she's aged a little bit.
Yeah, well, you need to search out Good Guys Wear Black, a Chuck Norris movie from, like, 1978 or something.
Not going to happen, but...
Yeah, well, it turns out it doesn't hold up anyway.
I never liked Chuck Norris. I like him even less now.
Well, it's kind of absurd. But it was fun when I was like 8 to 12, maybe. Yeah, and so we have this tension between Eric and his girlfriend. I'm sorry, his wife, Juliana.
Right.
Who is, again, East German and not religious. And... He, of course, he's working for the FBI. He can't tell her certain stuff, including anything about this particular mission.
Yeah.
So the FBI, it's explained in exposition that the FBI assumes a certain amount of pillow talk, but he's expressly told, oh, yeah, you can't share this particular thing with anybody. So.
Well, and the part of my problem with this movie is that Juliana seems to have a problem with him working for the FBI when she's encouraging, you know, him to successfully try and plow through the day-to-day drudgery of being a clerk when he wants to be a full agent. So it's kind of contradictory. Like you can't expect him to work for the FBI and tell you everything. You have to know that it comes with the territory that he's just not going to be able to talk about what he's doing. Especially at the levels of government.
Yeah, but knowing it and liking it are two different things. Like, she can support his dream without actually... I have a little
sympathy.
Like,
that's what you sign up for. If you know that's what your spouse is going to do, that's what you sign up for. If you marry a military guy, Air Force guy, Navy guy, you enter that knowing that your warrior partner is going to be gone a good deal of the time. Now, possibly they'll have a local station, local posting, but... That's not always the case.
You know, it's one thing to intellectualize it and say, oh, yeah, I'm up for that. And it's another thing to actually be dealing with it day to day.
Perhaps.
Because not only is he not telling her, he actually ends up lying to her about stuff.
Well, he has to lie to her because she's asking questions she shouldn't be asking.
Well, yeah. But again, these are normal questions. So she's just a bad spouse.
I wouldn't say she's a bad spouse. I would say she's pretty unsupportive of his career choice.
I don't know. I thought her character came off as being, obviously she was uncomfortable about Hansen and his wife.
Well, he was a creepy guy. So she had a right to be uncomfortable, especially because he was making very pointed and very, you know, very judgmental statements at her in her home.
Oh,
so
yeah.
So I can see that would be pretty adversarial.
Well, and in the movie, at least, showed up at her home.
And when they went to Hansen's house, the wife, I mean, where did you meet? Oh, we met at a bar. And you just, you can feel the tension.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's, that, I thought, again, Kathleen Quinlan did a great job.
Yeah, the judgment where she, very clearly, you can see the little thought bubble in her head that was, oh, dear.
Well, and there's a scene that toward the end where Hansen tells Eric to mail off this videotape, and Eric decides to take it home and steam it open and play it first just to see what's in it.
The most cliche spy move ever.
Yes. And of course, then he gets caught in a little yakety sax moment with the video in the player when his wife comes home. And it's a video of Hansen and his wife having sex. And so that's creepy enough, and that actually works better for the movie. But do you know what happened in real life?
No.
Instead of mailing out the videos, what he was doing was he was like setting up a secret camera and letting his friend, when his friend stayed the night, letting his friend like tune into their CCTV channel of he and his wife having sex. Very explicitly, on purpose.
Okay.
So he was a creep.
Yeah. And one would possibly say sexual deviant, though, you know, who cares?
Well, yeah, in that case, yeah, he may be a deviant, but he's also...
I mean, if she was consenting, it'd be one thing, but I don't think she was consenting, so...
Well, she was consenting to the sex, but not being videotaped, which is... or not being videotaped, not being actually
observed.
Broadcast. Yeah, so...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Observed by a third unknown party.
Yeah, and that definitely deviates from consent.
That's like some Cosbyism.
Yeah. Well, not quite.
Yeah, no drugs involved.
Well, and he wasn't doing anything against his wife's will, except for, anyway. Yeah, so he's definitely a creep. But again, turns out he's also a bad guy, because they knew of at least two people. If not, I mean, I think they said, 50 people he outed to the Soviets?
Yeah.
But at least two of them were executed, confirmed
Summarily executed.
Yes.
Russians don't take their spies very lightly.
Yeah, well, I don't think we do either. Although, again, I can only imagine what happens, because I'd like to think we're the good guys and everything, but it turns out recent history tells us, or Edward Snowden tells us, that
well, except not. That if you look at the fact that we allowed Hansen to plead down to life sentence, you know, we didn't execute him, and his crimes fell to the level of treason for the death penalty. So
most definitely.
He could have easily been put to death many times. And that was, in the movie at least, that was the goal. They wanted to get him and get him for, you know, murder charge.
Oh, yeah. Well, absolutely. Yeah, that's the thing. He was the, I mean, they spent millions of dollars to catch this guy and untold amount of man hours.
But also, in some ways, that's a prosecutor tool where, you know, you put the death penalty on the table, but then it's your lever.
Yeah, because then if he pleads to it, then he, you know.
Yeah, we can, you know, the death penalty is on the table, but if you cooperate with us and you do this A, B, and C, then maybe we'll take the needle off the table.
Well, and even, I can't remember his name in 24, but the president from 24, who is a senior agent.
Never saw it.
You never saw 24?
Nope.
You would know him as the distinguished black man who was in the Allstate commercial.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so back to Breach. I thought this movie did a really good job of having the Eric O'Neill character being kind of a fish out of water in the beginning, and Robert Hansen being in complete control. And over the course of this very tense movie, the tables... only at the very end do they actually turn, but you definitely see Chris Cooper does a fantastic job, because his character starts out as a very tense, uptight guy, and he just gets more and more unraveled as the movie continues.
Really do see his undoing throughout this movie.
But it's not like late Anthony Hopkins over the top. It's just the right amount of crumbling. You know, he's trying to keep it all together, but he's kind of slipping. And toward the end, he's actually drinking.
Yeah, he's running faster to try and keep from falling.
Yeah.
And that's only sustainable for a short period of time.
And I thought that was a fantastic job. I mean, he should have won an Academy Award for this movie.
Yeah, he absolutely did a fantastic portrayal and did some pretty creepy true-to-life mannerism interpretations and imitations. So, you know, kudos to him.
Well, plus, this is the same guy who played the Orchid Thief in the Nicolas Cage, what's the movie called? Adaptation. Have you seen the movie Adaptation?
Nope.
Oh, Adaptation is a fantastic movie.
Nicolas Cage, you say?
Nicolas Cage plays two roles, but it's Meryl Streep and Chris Cooper.
What?
I own it. It's a fantastic movie.
What we fuckery have to watch, is this?
No, we have to watch Adaptation. Okay, just picture it in your head, okay? You've never seen the movie.
Where else am I going to picture it?
Picture it on your thigh. The book the movie is by Charlie Kaufman, okay? Nicolas Cage plays Charlie Kaufman and his brother, and it's a movie where Charlie Kaufman is whining to his brother that he has been given the contract to write an adaptation of Susan Orlean's book, The Orchid Thief, which is a book about a woman who comes across a guy, played by Chris Cooper, who is literally in the Everglades of Florida stealing orchids from, like, national parks or Indian reservations and selling them. And he is supposed to adapt this into a mainstream Hollywood movie. And so Susan Orleans is played by Meryl Streep. Chris Cooper plays the Orchid Thief guy, who is, by the way, missing teeth and kind of a hillbilly. But, of course, a hillbilly with a heart of gold. And Nicolas Cage plays Charlie Kaufman, who is finding the process. It's a movie about his inability to make a movie. And it's fucking brilliant. It is really, really good.
Okay.
Yeah. I think Chris Cooper got an Academy Award nomination for that movie.
You're excellent.
We will have to add that to our list sooner than later.
He's a great actor. I mean, everything I've seen him in, you know, he's very well at his craft.
Oh yeah, he does great in this. He does great in that. I'm trying to think of other things he's been in.
Crap load of stuff.
But he's also got kind of a nondescript face too. As long as he's got all of his teeth. He's sort of like the everyman, so I think he can probably play a lot of that.
He played the American Beauty. I think he played the white supremacist.
The hard-ass dad who lived next door.
Yeah.
No spoilers, but
So I'm looking it up now. Bourne Identity. He was in the Bourne movies.
Ah, well, there you go.
One of them, at least.
No, he's great. He's Chris Cooper, American treasure. National treasure.
Through the rye.
Unlike the character he betrayed, who is a traitor to his country and a scoundrel.
He was in Capote.
Oh, did he play the sheriff?
Yes, he was the sheriff.
Okay, yeah.
He's been in many of the Bourne movies.
He's a class act.
Yeah. And I've always enjoyed him. He's always very... His performances are always very intense and believable. So,
well, and the in this movie, he unravels, and the Eric character is able to use his friendship to actually, because Hansen has actually, by the end of the movie, he has decided, he has kind of figured out that he's at least being marginalized, and so he's not really going to have access too much, you know, many more secrets, and he doesn't really have the access to, or, you know, he doesn't want to chance another drop, because he's known all along that he's going to have an exit strategy. At some point, he's going to have to do a runner, because he is a traitor. He knows he's a traitor. But Eric gets him to, by questioning, and this really is a spoiler, so if you haven't seen the movie, go see it, because this is great. But at the end, by basically assaulting his ego.
Yeah.
You know.
Making him worthless.
Yeah, telling him that he's not that important.
Yeah.
Like, Hansen is getting more and more paranoid, and Eric is like, no, it's all paranoia. Nobody cares about you.
You have no meaning. You have no worth. You have no value.
Yeah, you don't matter.
Yeah.
And his line back is, oh, I matter plenty.
Yeah.
And so he knows now he's tricked him into making that drop.
But that apex where they're out in the park and he just starts firing his gun is, and I haven't, and granted, I own this DVD. I've seen this movie a couple, three or four times, but I haven't watched it in 5 or 6 years. And I had forgotten this part of the movie and I had forgotten what was happening. And I was absolutely tense and rapt, you know, on the edge of my seat. Cause I, even though I know how the movie ended, it still, I got caught up in the anxiety of the moment and it was great.
Oh yeah. And spoiler, he actually tries to shoot Eric at the very end of it, but is out of bullets by that time. Yeah. And that's when Eric basically says, what are you doing? You know, you are drunk and you are crazy. Nobody cares enough about you, old man. Delivers, again, a very good performance. I don't think I've seen anything that Ryan Phillippe has been in since Cruel Intentions that was this good.
Wow.
And I only have fondness for Cruel Intentions because I think it's very time and place movie. I'm not sure if it even holds up today.
I would be surprised if it did.
Yeah. But yeah. And of course, at the end of the movie, really digging into spoilers here. So they catch him, you know, this is a historical fiction, so you kind of know where it's going. In the very beginning of the movie, they tell you they caught him, so you already know that where it's going. But what you don't know is that by doing this, by being part of, and of actually an essential part of catching the biggest spy in the history of the country, Eric O'Neill would have certainly have made agent, without a doubt. But he decides it's not worth it. Through this whole thing, he's, you know, I think the Laura Linney character, Kate, actually says, you know, so, you know, what is, you know, is it that your wife can't handle it? And he says, I don't think I want her to.
Yeah.
So now is the real Eric O'Neill still married to the real Juliana?
Yes.
Oh, well, that's nice to know.
Or at least as of the interview on the DVD, because they have all the extra features.
Yeah.
They were still married. They're practicing law in Washington or Maryland.
Oh, yeah. Excellent.
You know, but the point that the Laura Linney character makes, that he retorts back, you know, I'm at the top of my game. What's the better time to go out?
Well,
you know,
exactly.
What am I going to do? He doesn't say this, but, you know, the implication is, what am I going to do that's going to beat this?
Exactly. Yeah, he's got something good on his resume.
Yeah, there's not much. I mean, you always go out on a win.
Yeah, it's like George from it's a Costanza move. The episode where he goes out on a high note, it's like, and I'm out. If somebody laughs at him, he had to say.
I've never seen Seinfeld.
At all? Ever? In a single episode?
I've seen a single episode here and there. I can't stand it. I can't sit through
it. So you don't know about Man Hands and Co-Stalkers?
No.
Okay.
No, I just can't. I can't handle. I couldn't handle Seinfeld. I just.
Can I point out that I'm a big fan of Julia Louis-Dreyfus?
I love her.
The New Adventures of Old Christine is a fucking hilarious show. Yeah. I've seen it on a rerun. I think it's like on frequent rotation because it's on TV Land or something at the right time
of night.
Wasn't
she on Saturday Night Live for a season?
She was. She was also She's also married to Brad Hall from Saturday Night Live. So, and they're still married, as far as I know.
You know her family.
The Dreyfuses?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, she's been rich forever.
Yeah. Well, rich and part of CBS.
Oh, okay.
Because I think Dreyfus owns one of the CBS buildings.
Maybe.
I think one of the buildings is actually named after Dreyfus. Hmm. So, if I'm not mistaken. And I might be. You know, I could completely be talking on my ass.
No, I think, well, I don't know about whether, and is this related to the Richard Dreyfuss?
No.
Okay. Separate Dreyfusses. Actually, we do have a machine that can look this up. Anyway, so to finish up our conversation about Breach, again, this may be one of our shorter episodes, depending on what kind of housekeeping you have. It's like I said, it's just a taut thriller. It's great. You know, after all these sort of madcap, over-the-top Christmas movies we've been watching lately, it's nice to get into kind of a thinker. But it's not slow at all.
I didn't think so.
Oh, yeah. So she was born to Judith Lefebvre, a special needs tutor and author, and Gerard Louis Dreyfus, a billionaire businessman.
Yeah.
Her parents divorced when she was young, and she spent the time in New York, blah, blah, blah. She met her husband Brad Hall in college. She made her feature movie debut. She made her movie debut in the Woody Allen film Hannah and Her Sisters.
Oh.
Her paternal grandfather, Pierre Louis Dreyfus, was from a prominent French Jewish family, while Julia's other ancestry is German, Mexican, English, French, Scottish, and Scots-Irish. She must have participated in one of those DNA shows. I'm guessing, because otherwise, how would the public know this? Self. She's been in herself.
Well, it's Wikipedia. They make it up.
No, this is IMDb, where they also make it up.
I was going to say.
Yeah.
Six of one, a half dozen of another.
Yeah. Let me just, if you haven't seen much of it, The New Adventures of Old Christine.
I've seen a few episodes and I thought it was quite funny.
Really funny.
And I'm
a big fan of Wanda Sykes.
I love Wanda Sykes. Veep, she's in Veep, right?
She is, yes. Yes, she is in Veep, and Veep is pretty great.
Yeah, I have, Veep is on my list, but I just got so much. I am listening to, finishing up the audiobook for The Iceman.
Oh, yeah. And is it good? Have you seen the movie?
I haven't seen the movie.
Okay.
I'm listening to the book, which is narrated by Bronson Pinchot.
Balky?
Yeah. But his voice is like,
my name is Richard Kuklinski. Don't be ridiculous.
Of course not. Don't be ridiculous.
Calls no, Larry.
Actually, his the audio, the voice that he puts, it's unrecognizable as him.
Oh, he is a really good audiobook reader.
I wasn't aware that he has done much.
No, he is one of the best.
But he absolutely have no. I had no. If you played an excerpt of it and said which actor is this, I couldn't have picked him in a list of 1,000.
Yeah, it's
the book is amazing and frightening and terrifying and.
Well, egads. And does it tell you in the beginning that he's kind of an unreliable narrator?
I'm sorry.
Well, okay, the book is by him or from his point of view, right? Or is it interviews with him? Or
no, this is written by, I think, from the police perspective.
Because he has made some claims that are hard to verify.
Yeah, I'm not sure the book.
Like he has killed either 30 or 250 people. Depending on who you ask.
Well, you know, because when you're in jail, you might as well be vague, right?
Well, and as we found out from Henry Lee Lucas and Otis Toole, Henry Lee Lucas was very famous for claiming to have killed pretty much everybody. And they would take, you know, happy to clear up cases, like sheriff's offices would take him out of jail and go and have him disclose where he buried bodies. But a lot of the time, he had no fucking idea. I mean, he was just claiming to everything. And he was about, you know, half a sandwich short of a picnic anyway. So, but he liked the attention, and he got out of jail a lot to go on trips. But I think Otis Toole, which was Henry Lucas's, like, running buddy, I think he may have been the one that ended up killing Adam Walsh. So, very sad there. John Walsh's kid, Code Adam.
Yeah, I got that. Now I'm looking for the authors. See if I can find anything on the author. Because the author's Anthony Bruno. So I get the impression that this is not from Kuklinski's point of view. It's from some of the interviews, but not.
Have you seen the interviews?
Mm-mm.
HBO actually has a documentary that's like the Iceman tapes.
Wow.
And it's worth watching. After you're done with the book, it's worth watching because you get to hear him tell these stories.
He's a piece of work, be sure.
Yep. And the movie's good. I recommend it.
So I've been enjoying that. That's it's been interesting because he's just the man is so it's frightening how he can be seemingly so cool about murdering people. But I guess by definition, if you're going to be a hired killer, you have to be.
Well, in the movie, at least, it gets the impression that it's not just something that he is good at, but it's something that he needs to do.
And that's what the book, the book intimates, that he's able to do it because he's so divorced from it being emotional. It's just a task to him, a means to an end. So I recommend it as a book. It's pretty fantastic. It's not very long, but it's got some chilling moments, and you certainly, he's not a likable person in any sense of the reality.
Yeah. Well, I know I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, The Message, the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And, have I mentioned, the Black Tapes?
It sounds familiar.
It's kind of like the X-Files meets Serial. And it's just interesting. It's along the same lines. It's like, serialized fiction. Yeah, with kind of supernatural.
I wrote it down in my notes when we talked about Goodnight and Good Luck, about The Message and The Black Tapes.
I've been looking for kind of similar things to those. I actually ended up buying a bunch of old-time radio stuff. I just love some of that stuff. We'll have to talk about old-time radio at some point. Or maybe I'll just do a one-off or whatever.
No, that'd be fun.
Like Eric Presents the Chicken Heart. Because it's all public domain, we could play the whole damn episode.
That might be fun.
Yeah.
And thank God for you and Drew doing The Last Boy Scout. I think I left a message.
Yes, yes, you did. There's no reason to see the movie. It's not a good movie.
I got that. I ain't got that impression.
Yeah. So it's funny. So Drew ended up for Christmas. Drew got two movies. He liked Long Kiss Goodnight better than he liked Last Boy Scout. He just had a problem with Gina Davis, so it wasn't a super pleasure. He didn't have as much fun as he thought he was going to. And then we watched The Elf, which was not your favorite Christmas movie. And we watched, Gremlins, which we both agreed was a great movie. And then Trading Places, which we both agreed was funny, but doesn't really hold up as well. And then, of course, A Christmas Story, which we both agreed was a great movie. So,
yeah, I think anybody who doesn't like that movie is un-American.
Yeah. I think next year we're going to have to watch the Star Wars Christmas special from 1978.
Well, then you would have to also throw in the Star Trek Christmas special.
There's a Star Trek Christmas special?
Oh, yes, there is.
Oh, yeah. Are you
kidding?
That we'll have to do. That would be fun. Because the Star Wars Christmas special apparently is a piece of work. Like, it is the worst thing that's ever been on television, apparently.
That's a very bold statement.
Well, B. Arthur sings.
Again, that's not a terror. I mean,
there's 10 minutes, 10 solid minutes of Wookiee talk that is not subtitled.
I would kill myself.
You see, I'm telling you.
Twilight. What's this Twilight on the calendar?
It's not what you think. It's okay. Susan Sarandon and Paul Newman.
Wow.
And maybe Gene Hackman too.
That sounds compelling.
Tomorrow we talk about Heist, which is a movie I had to buy because I couldn't get it in the right amount of time.
Heist.
From 2001, it's a Gene Hackman movie by David Mamet. Gene Hackman, Delroy Lindo, Sam Rockwell, Danny DeVito.
Yeah,
really good.
Yeah.
So you get to hear about that.
We have Wild at Heart. And so the first movie we're doing together is Idiocracy?
Yep. Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com. Or call us on our new voicemail account to leave voice messages. Or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. 843-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts. Dial it already.